You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. For a lot of college and university hopefuls in the admission process, the good news or bad news has already arrived, and it's time to pick a school, start making plans. But for people trying to get into the university seen as elite, high-prestige institutions, the letter may still be in the mail.
But when it comes down to it, does it really matter? Does going to the most prestigious possible school make a positive difference in life, in a career? Recent pieces in Time, The Washington Post, and elsewhere have made the case that no, it doesn't matter where you go to school.
Well, our next guest says it's a little more complicated than that, and he digs into the issue in a recent piece we've linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Derek Thompson is senior editor at The Atlantic. Derek, welcome back.
Good to be back.
Well, Derek, in your piece, you're kind of responding to arguments out there that say it doesn't matter where you go to college. It's a comforting sentiment, one that people want to hear. The argument being that graduates of elite schools don't really do better in the long run than people at other colleges. But you don't quite buy into that. Why not?
Well, I think there's two major points that I want to be clear about. The first point is that I do think that the mania surrounding what college smart 17 and 18-year-old kids go to, the mania is real, and the mania is overblown. That said, it does matter where you go to college, plain and simple. You look at the data, and graduates of the most prestigious colleges tend to earn more than graduates of less select public universities. Those graduates of four-year universities at any level are more likely to be employed, to have jobs, than graduates of two-year community schools. And those graduates of two-year community schools fare better in the labor force than people who just graduate from an online university or don't go to college at all. So you see that there is real stratification in this in the enormous collection of colleges that we have here in the United States. And so I don't think that the best, most empirical message for young people and for families is simply the name on your degree does not matter at all. Everything that we have suggests, of course, where you go to college, going to an elite school, will, you know, in the long run and in the aggregate have a different outcome than a graduate simply going to a online university that employers haven't heard of.
But on the other hand, you say that people who get rejected from the university of their choice, maybe an elite university, maybe someone's holding that rejection letter in their hand right now, you say they shouldn't be too crushed by that. So why not, given what you just said?
Right. So this goes back to one of my favorite studies about education and outcomes. And you have two economists, Stacey Berg Dale and Alan Krueger. And what they did essentially is they looked at students who attended really selective colleges. And then they compared them with students of seemingly comparable ability. All right. So similar SAT scores, similar grades, who attended less selective colleges. So you're essentially taking a look at the people who apply to, I don't know, let's say, I went to Northwestern. Let's say, you know, Northwestern, the University of Chicago. You're comparing the people that applied to and got into those schools with the people who were basically just as good by SAT and grade and extracurriculars, but didn't get into those schools. How did those outcomes compare? And what they found is that they fared really, really similarly. And so the lesson that I draw from this is that where you go to school is a really good indication of the person you're becoming when you turn 17 or 18. There's all sorts of really interesting developmental psychology studies that look at how habit formation in your teen and early 20 years dictate habits through the rest of your life. So the more precise, empirical, and perhaps inspirational message for young people applying to school, anxiously waiting for that envelope, and their parents and their friends and their uncles is the person who you're most likely to become is actually sort of already baked in. It's the product of all the hard work that you've already done, and it's not so much the product of the name of the school that says yes this week or next week. So in that sense, I think it's more sensible to say, yes, of course, you know, where you go to school matters, but it only matters because, generally speaking, where you go to school is an indication of the person who you are becoming.
Do we have a handle at all on what are the best predictors of future success? If you take out the college thing and look at the people that 17, 18-year-olds are at that point, what measures can we use to look at that?
Well, there's a lot of interesting and fairly good measures of future success. The type of school you go to is certainly one of them. Habits that you form is another. Besides these sort of broad traits or variables, though, it's really difficult to predict success. There's been a lot of wonderful pieces written precisely about the difficulty of predicting success. And, you know, one way that I think about it, because I'm a sports fan, you look at the college, at the NFL draft that's coming up in the next few weeks. I believe it's 2.5 weeks away that the NFL is going to draft its next batch of rookies. We all know people, great players like, say, Peyton Manning, who were drafted number one and went on to have wonderful careers. We also know busts, who were drafted number one or number two, who went on to do very little. And then we also know about Tom Brady's and Russell Wilson's out there, who were drafted really late by a bunch of experts, but nonetheless have turned into some of the best players in NFL history. I think sort of analogously about this situation, and I think, you know, what does it tell us about success? I think what it tells us about success is that there's only so much that you can predict with a high degree of certainty when someone is just 18 or 22, when you're looking at who that person's going to be when they're 29, 35, 45. A lot of what makes someone like, you know, Russell Wilson or Tom Brady end up becoming better than, you know, most of the number one picks in NFL history is that they work really hard. And so grit and hard work and resilience and stick-to-itiveness and all these terms that are really hard to measure empirically clearly have enormous sway in the outcome of professional athletes. We have great record of that. And then obviously for the rest of us as well.
Talking to Derek Thompson from The Atlantic, talking about college prestige and future success in work and in life. Now, Derek, one thing we might wonder is if we're going to that higher prestige school, that elite school, are we going to get a better education? Is more information going to be beamed into our brains as a result, or is that too hard to measure?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite things to think about. What's the right way to measure whether a college is good? And I think the reason that it's really difficult to measure the specific educational quality of elite schools is that elite schools aren't taking some random sample of high school students and churning out success stories over and over. Instead, they're accepting people who are often already on the road to success, connecting them with other people who are just like them and with an alumni network of workers who are successful as well, and then giving them a degree that signals to other employers, hey, this person has the potential to be incredibly successful in the future. So, you know, a university is not just an education. It's an education, it's a network, both the peers in your class and with alumni who have graduated. And finally, number three, it's a signal. Harvard sends a very specific signal that University of Phoenix cannot send, even if someone at the University of Phoenix gets the exact same quality, quote-unquote, education as someone at Harvard. The reason that it's so difficult to measure is because it's so difficult to tease out these three effects: quality of education, quality of network, and quality of signal. A great university has all three.
We're talking right now with Derek Thompson about his recent piece in The Atlantic about how much it matters for students to attend the best possible university as people hoping to get into some of the country's most prestigious institutions wait for those admissions letters.
We want to hear your thoughts and your stories. Looking back, how much did your choice of whether to attend college and where to go affect your life? If you could go back and do it differently, What would you do? And if you or someone in your family is on the road to college now or in the next couple of years, what factors are you considering? Where did you apply and why? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We continue our conversation now with Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic Magazine, talking about college and his recent piece in The Atlantic called It Doesn't Matter Where You Go to College, Inspirational but Wrong.
You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think? Does a higher prestige college lead to better jobs, more satisfaction at work, a happier life? Or is it down to the individual, what they make of their education, whatever it might be? And you could share your story, too, if you'd do it differently, if you had a chance to do it again. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to a caller. We've got Matt on the line in Sparta. Matt, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm currently on my fourth UW system college, and I can definitely say that the one I'm at now, which is generally considered more rigorous, harder to get into, probably more prestigious, is more difficult than the other three in one of the science programs, and the professors' expectations are higher. I'd say that the level of education, the quality of education is probably higher, and especially the science labs are more involved and more difficult. And I feel like I'll probably be more prepared because of the UW school that I'm at right now, as opposed to the three that I have been at previously. So I think it probably does matter to some extent.
Matt, thanks a lot for the call. Interesting point. Maybe a higher prestige, higher expectations, and thus higher quality, Derek.
Yeah, it's possible. You know, one of the most compelling stats that I didn't have a chance to mention earlier is that there was a study looking at the number of billionaires and Forbes' most powerful people and what share of them went to the most elite schools in the country. And it turned out that it 44.8% of billionaires, 56% of Forbes' most powerful women, and 85% of Forbes' most powerful men went to the same small group of elite schools. And so it's difficult to look at the sort of the concentration of both power and wealth going to graduates of the same small number of colleges and assuming that the college doesn't matter at all in terms of outcomes. Obviously, this is not just because of the better education afforded by these universities, but also because of networks and, again, that powerful signal that the most prestigious schools also have.
Well, thank you for that call. And we're going to move on to Lorenzo joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Lorenzo.
Hello. How's it going?
Good, thanks. What do you think?
I think that there was a question asked by the host earlier that kind of got an inadequate response, that question being, what do all the 17 and 18-year-olds have in common that might help us learn where they might land? And I think you talked about, in your sports analogy, that they have these hard work ethics and these grit and this determination. And I think it kind of is untrue. I think it's a very narrow look at what these students might have in common. Is there anything showing what socioeconomic factors they may have in common that account for the fact that maybe they do have similar outcomes, not so much because of their individual attributes, but more so what they all had in common before we even begin measuring the individual attributes? I think that would be more telling and lead us to really see where they would end up eventually. However, I think this conversation is a bit, you know, upsetting because it is not inclusive of students who will work really hard and who do have grit at the age of 17 and 18 and who could never even probably apply to an Ivy League school or think that.
Lorenzo, thanks a lot for joining us or for asking that question. And Derek, this is something you've thought some about yourself in terms of people who get left out of this conversation who don't come from the privileged socioeconomic backgrounds that can go to this handful of elite schools. What about qualities they have and in broadening the conversation to bridge that gap?
I think this is such a great question. You know, when we talk about the mania around prestigious schools, the most important place to begin, I think, is to say that elite colleges aren't normal. This is a problem for 3% of 17 and 18-year-olds, you know, worrying about which prestigious school am I going to get into. There's 4 million 18-year-olds in the U.S. Most of them, about 3.5 million of them, will go to college, but only a tiny sliver of them are worried about, you know, the response they're going to get from, you know, Princeton and University of Wisconsin and Northwestern. So, you know, more broadly speaking, I think the caller was really interested in asking a question about, I guess, what economists would call inputs. There is a lot of evidence that shows that economic opportunity is not evenly spread across the country. It is concentrated on the coasts. It's concentrated by ethnicity. It's clear that, you know, whites have different opportunities than blacks and Hispanics for a host of reasons that you know, span history and culture. And then also that, you know, just wealth itself tends to promote wealth. And rich parents are, you know, spend a lot of their money making sure that their children have the same opportunities that they did. And this is completely fine and adequate to love your child a lot, but that creates a kind of cumulative advantage standpoint where, you know, the rich can tend to get richer. So in no way was I trying to suggest that the secret to success is hard work, and anyone who works hard ipso facto becomes rich. I think that's obviously not true. There are people who don't work hard who become rich and people who work extremely hard who don't. I was responding more to the specific question of how do you predict success, which I think is difficult. But obviously there are a lot of historical problems in the country, whether it's divisions by race or wealth or geography, that are not going to be solved by one generation of people going to college, and that's definitely something to think about.
Talking to Derek Thompson about college, future success, and opportunity. And Derek, before we move along, you'd written in the past making the case that opportunities to get into prestigious universities should be expanded to include more people from low-income backgrounds in particular. What would be the change?
Well, a lot of prestigious colleges are extremely good at looking to elite schools and taking their best and brightest, most interesting students. They're not as good at casting their eye towards lower income communities that don't often send people to, say, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, et cetera, to find the best and brightest there. So what you have essentially is this discovery problem. How do you find extremely smart and promising low income people living in areas that don't typically send their 18-year-olds to Harvard? Solving this question and advancing the benefits of a Harvard's education and network and signal to these lower-income students, that would be even more valuable, I think, than bestowing those same gifts on an otherwise privileged youngster.
Derek, how do you think the conversation that we're having right now relates to a broader conversation that's been increasingly going on about whether college is still worth it for a lot of people in terms of the cost, the student debt load, and whether the amount of work and financial input equates to, you know, better job, more money down the road at all? Increasingly, like, that question is one that people are trying to get a handle on, whether college pays off.
Right. This is an extremely complicated issue that has lots of exceptions. And whenever you make one generalization, you can always have somebody say, no, but that's not true for this person. But the generalizations that nonetheless seem to be true are the following. People who graduate from college tend to handle their student debt better than people who drop out of college. People who graduate from master's programs and professional degree programs, even though they have more debt, are often less likely to default than even people who dropped out earlier on. And people who have four-year degrees and master's degrees and professional degrees are almost all employed at higher rates than people who just go to community college or people who don't go to college at all. all. There is not a lot of empirical evidence that suggests that the typical person weighing the benefits of college is better off not going. Just about all the evidence I've seen suggests that that marginal person should get a college degree. Unfortunately, for lots of reasons, including budget cuts and the growth of administrative hires, college is much more expensive than it used to be, and it is growing. The price of it is growing much faster than wages. And so it is more expensive than it used to be, but it's also extremely important. And when you compare the wages of college graduates to people who don't go to college, this is the so-called college premium. It is not at an all-time high, but it is dang near close to an all-time high. There is not a lot of evidence that says that people should not go to college.
Derek, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. His piece on college is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. You can head on over and keep the conversation going over there. Tell us your story. Tell us about the choices you made and how you think they paid out if you do the same thing over again when it comes to your decisions about college.